Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio here Toby Edmonds for another edition of You Ought to Know. Welcome, Toby.
Good morning, Mike.
You have been places.
I have. Yep.
Tell us what the world is like out there outside of Alaska.
Well, it kind of depends on which part of the world you're going to, but in particular, I was in Florida for 10 days. I was down there for a convention for, once again, automotive-related stuff. But then I did extend it a little bit beyond that and hung out in the Keys for about 5 days.
Do they have cars in the Keys?
They do. Some of them by very loose description.
Well, I wondered about that because my image of the Keys, I've driven down in that direction, or been in that direction, and it's sort of, I think, been portrayed as a laid-back area.
Kind of anything goes, yep. If you can get in and start it and take it down the road at a reasonable amount of speed, it qualifies as a car.
Okay. But overall, did you notice, one of the fascinating experiences I have is whenever I go out anywhere, to whether it's California or Colorado or you name it, I'm looking around and saying, do they do things differently here? Meaning, are there some vehicles that are more popular, or do they have more new vehicles, or there's some sign of the changing, the evolution of what's happening with vehicles? Did you notice anything in Florida in particular that has not yet hit here in terms of overall vehicle density characteristics or anything?
You know, that is kind of funny you should bring that up, because whenever I go somewhere, I really do, and I can't help it. You know, right. It's what I notice.
Sure.
And it's so not only do I look at cars and how what's going on with that population, you know, what's popular in this area, what's not, how people generally take care of their vehicles overall. Because, I mean, that's the other thing I have noticed is that how the average car and how it's maintained seems to be kind of a socially wide concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go through pockets of areas where vehicle maintenance is not super high, mm-hmm, on people's list of priorities.
Sure.
Like I said, down in the Keys, I mean, I'm not trying to be insulting, but, you know, it's just, it wasn't the top priority for that area.
Sure.
Now, when it comes to their boats, on the other hand, obviously that was a completely different story. But, you know, the vehicles, the land part was pretty much treated as kind of a necessary part of just island life. You know, you needed it in order to go from your boat to the grocery store.
Okay.
So, you know, it is kind of something that you can look over and you can see the difference in the shops, how many automotive repair shops are there, what type of shops they are, what they specialize in, how well-maintained the shops themselves are. But as far as the types of vehicles, you know, you go to California, especially LA, where I travel to a lot,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, you have a lot of super high-end cars. They're very, they're usually German, you know, European imports. They're all very well-maintained. They're all kept very clean.
Mm.
There's car washes on every single corner. I mean, it's something that just everybody just does naturally. One thing, because I started out in Orlando,
okay,
in Florida, and then kind of steadily moved my way south, and then ended up in Miami where I took off. And Orlando, I saw a lot of Asian import vehicles, a lot of older domestic vehicles, not a lot of European vehicles, which is something that kind of surprised me. I was kind of expecting the opposite. And then especially the further south I got, that's what I was absolutely expecting, was a lot of higher end European vehicles and not so much. Saw a lot of Hondas, a lot of Toyotas, nothing super advanced, nothing that really kind of surprised me in any way. It was all very run of the mill.
Sure.
And now, granted, I didn't spend a lot of time in like Miami or anything like that. But, you know, even there, you just didn't see it. And then, of course, once you advance down into the Keys, you know, like I said, you had vehicles that qualified for as a car in the most basic sense. And then what we saw was a lot of shops that specialized heavily in things that people would place priority on, things like air conditioning.
Oh,
it's a lot of AC shops.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's the buff course, yeah.
Yep.
It's hot there.
Yep. So that kind of got me thinking, you know, it's like, you know, up here in Alaska, you know, we see, at my shop at least, we see a lot of the same problems universally across all makes and models.
Sure.
We see a lot of similar problems, and it's based upon environment. You know, you go down to someplace that's dry and desert-like, and you're going to see same type of problems universally across all makes and models. You go over to the East Coast, where they use salt quite heavily on the roads. Mm. You can pretty much guarantee that the undercarriage of that vehicle is going to be rusted out.
Sure.
So it just, it got me thinking about the impact of the environment that the vehicle is in and how it affects it and problems that you may find wrong with it or experience when you own the vehicle.
Very good. Yeah. I think there's a interesting ecosystem, a vehicular ecosystem in the Bay Area or Silicon Valley or in California, because when I travel to that area, I see, what's above high end? I see a lot of innovative vehicles. I mean, electric cars all over the place, but also, you know, I could see a Maserati drive by followed by Ferrari followed by whatever.
Yeah, there anything goes down there. I mean, like you're right. You know, you see a lot of. I don't want to say experimental because I mean they're still they're in production. They're production
sure.
vehicles, but you know you did. I mean, California hands down was the first one to really embrace the whole electric vehicle, hybrid vehicle. I mean, they're and it's actually proving grounds for a lot of manufacturers. For those types of vehicles, they will sell them to California first
right.
because it's embraced by the population down there.
Sure.
Whereas
sure.
if you were to do the same thing up here in Alaska, it probably wouldn't go as quite as quickly.
Sure.
You know, it would eventually take off as evidenced by, the, you know, the population increase of electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles up here. But it takes a little bit longer for it to take with our population up here.
Of course, we have this other thing that's just been suggested. Given the possibility that there won't be as stringent a set of guidelines for improving the miles per gallon performance of vehicles, there seems to be a shift that's been reported toward SUVs, larger vehicles, with looking into the near future and saying, one, as has been often reported, manufacturers make more money on the bigger vehicle than they do on the smaller vehicle. And there seems to be a shift. I'm not sure who leads who down the road on this. The manufacturer says, this is what people want. We're going to build a bigger car because we have a greater demand. I'm not sure where this, the cultural dimension of car care and car buying. I'm not sure where it comes from. It seems it's
absolutely market driven.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in places where it can be kind of rural. I mean, up here in Alaska, pretty much everybody owns a truck or a truck equivalent type
right.
vehicle.
Sure.
You know, because you don't have, we don't have, in some areas of Alaska, we don't have the same conveniences that other places in the United States might have. I mean, a lot of people still haul their own trash to the dump.
Sure.
That requires a truck, or at least a truck or an SUV with a trailer. You know, it's a required part of Alaskan life. You know, we're very outdoorsy. We usually have boats or toys of some kind in which, you know, we will haul stuff. We tow stuff. We're very active outdoors. Whereas, you know, you might go down to California and you could have a vehicle that's never really been driven outside of its 10-mile radius.
Sure.
You know, and it's a small car because of it, lack of parking. You're going to need to be able to park it in tight spaces. But what, you know, so it's absolutely market driven. You know, manufacturers are going to produce what people want to buy. Mm-hmm. So, but at the same token, you know, they also do have to adhere to federal regulations for emissions. And as, you know, we've talked about before, the federal government's really trying to crack down on that, really trying to improve the emissions of vehicles. You know, manufacturers by, I think it's 2025, have to have an average, and that's where you're seeing a lot of these very fuel-efficient smaller cars but yet they're still continuing to produce the trucks because manufacturers have to hit an average miles per gallon for their vehicle lineup. Mm-hmm. So they use the hybrids and the electric vehicles to increase their average MPG and overall fuel efficiency for their entire lineup.
Sure.
It kind of equals out the trucks and the SUVs. But you know, we are starting to see a huge increase as well as a huge demand for a lot of the style techniques, a lot of the technology that is cropping up on European vehicles.
Right.
You know, if you look at the newer Fords, the newer Chevys, even the newer Toyotas, they look very European in their styling. So it's market driven, because I mean, obviously a company like Ford's not going to manufacture something that somebody's not going to buy, what they don't want.
Sure. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. That every manufacturer has the hope that all their vehicles will be much desired. Well, I've started asking a few questions. Did you have some particular things you wanted to do today as well?
Oh, we're actually kind of touching on it right now.
Okay.
I mean, when I was down in Florida, like I said, I started thinking about the impact of the environment that the vehicle is in and the typical problems that you would see, you know, kind of like what we touched on many, many times before. Up here in Alaska, across the board, we see a lot of things like blower motor problems in the wintertime, a lot of cracked belts, a lot of four-wheel drive issues. And these are all problems that are kind of universal across all makes and models because of the environment that it's in.
Right, right.
You know, things like bearings are affected adversely in cold periods, fuel pumps. You know, when we see an increase in fuel pump failure when it starts to get really cold out as well. So, I mean, there's, you know, you think to yourself, oh, you know, that car over there, I'm not going to buy that car because it's known for this problem. Or this car over here, it's known for that problem. But there are certain problems that just cross, you know, all lines, and
sure,
it's because of environment.
So we're entering, you know, I know that we've talked way back when we were going fall into winter, and there were a number of things that happened when the temperature first plunged, batteries and other things. Now we're coming into the other end of the seasons. We're going from cold to warm, and arguably the summer will have warm days and the rest of it. What kinds of things classically happen at that transition time? Is it more severe the other end, fall and winter, than typically in the summer?
It is absolutely more severe. You see a lot more problems crop up in colder weather for us up here.
Mm-hmm.
However, that does not completely eliminate summertime warm weather type problems. We typically do see a lot of cooling system failures in the summertime.
Okay.
A lot of overheating. So water pumps, coolant flushes, those types of repairs. We also see a lot of AC, air conditioning repairs as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as it's kind of the joke, you know, Alaskans don't need AC. We just roll our windows down. but actually quite a few people do depend upon their AC and they prefer it and they want it operating. So we do see a lot of air conditioning, repairs. We also see a lot of windows because people are rolling them up and down a lot more. And especially in the very beginning, springtime-ish,
mm-hmm.
Because lots of times what will happen is somebody in the middle of winter will try to roll down their window when it's frozen. And there's these little plastic clips,
right,
that attach the glass to the actual window regulator. And I'm sure we all know what happens to plastic when it gets really, really cold out, mm-hmm. and you move it in a sharp, jarring action. Those plastic, yeah, clips will snap.
Yep, yep.
So we see a lot of windows that will fall down inside the doors, windows that won't roll back up. It could be damage that is experienced at that point of failure, or it could be something that happened earlier on in the season when it was colder out. So those are some of the typical problems that we see that are environmental as opposed to manufacturer specific. You can have the most reliable vehicle in the entire world, but you still can't escape the fact that that vehicle still exists in that environment.
And of course, I'm, as you were talking, I began to think about the change in the light in the middle of winter, having all of the the lights on your vehicle work is really critical. And then we slide into this period of time when there's very little dark. And I seem to notice more and more vehicles that have made it through the winter, but occasional bulb has burned down, et cetera. And then in the summertime, unless you're driving with your headlights on all the time, and which I happen to do, I won't notice. You don't notice the bulbs that are not working as much. If you have a new vehicle, very often there's a sensor that says, whoop, you know, your left turn signal light is out. But many other people, that's not the case. You don't know that a brake light is not working anymore.
Right. Because it's, you know, you don't have that darker, you know, that darker light that allows stuff like that to shine or not shine through.
Sure.
You do see a lot of people who may have a burnt out bulb, and it's because it's not winter anymore and it's light out all the time. Either they don't know that it's not burnt out, or it's kind of slid to the bottom of the list of priorities because it isn't something that they're necessarily relying upon at this moment in time. But myself, like you, I prefer to drive with my headlights on all the time. I know that it increases my visibility on the road. And so I will drive with my headlights on all the time. And when you bring your vehicle into a shop, most shops that are reputable will do a courtesy inspection on your vehicle, and they do check your bulbs.
Right.
So at that point in time, they will tell you, hey, you've got a bulb burnt out here. Did you want to replace it?
Sure. Okay. And of course, there's that other change that happens. We actually get rain happening, and the wiper blades, I have found, I relish when I'm in, maybe I rent a vehicle, for example, or I have a new vehicle with new wiper blades on and it's raining. A place like Orlando, it could do that. And turn it on, and actually everything works, and it doesn't make incredibly bizarre noises.
Obnoxious sounds, yeah, as it scoots across the window.
It seems to me that a wiper blade has one of the shortest lifespans of working quietly and well of any component on a vehicle.
You know, Mike, that's funny you should say that, because I'm actually really guilty of it myself too, because wiper blades are something that you don't necessarily think of until you go to use them.
Right.
And you make that mental note to yourself going, geez, this is really terrible. I can't see anything. I need to make sure I get new wiper blades. Mm-hmm. And then it stops raining and you forget all about it again.
Right.
But, you know, in wiper blades, especially up here, because, you know, people will use them for clearing their windshields in the wintertime,
right.
You know, and so all that stuff will absolutely shorten the lifespan of the rubber on the blade. So it is something that you do want to make sure, especially as we're heading into breakup season too,
mm-hmm.
You're going to want to make sure that you're checking the condition of your windshield wiper blades. So as people splatter dirty mud and water up on your windshield as you're driving, you can clear that stuff off and stay safe. Windshield washer fluid is another thing that you want to make sure is topped off, because, you know, you don't want to go through the breakup season without it.
Right. And it's amazing, because you're right. You can, on a day like today, it seems clear, it's fine, you're driving along, it's no problem. But there are those times, particularly when you get a little bit of wet and everything is spraying up and there's still all the dirt and dust on the road, that having a wiper system with washers is absolutely essential.
Absolutely. I've been on the failing end of that equation, and it is not a pleasant experience, because it is, you know, you're driving trying to maintain safe distances and you're trying to stay in your lane and you can't see diddly squat.
Right.
So it is something that you want to make sure that you're checking out on, you know, filling up the car, you know, pop the hood, check the windshield washer fluid level, run your fingers along the blades. If you see any rips, any tears, any excessive kind of wobble or play to the blade. I mean, the rubber wants to be firm, but not so firm that as it moves across the glass, it makes that chattering, squelching noise.
Right. Now, there's also, in addition to that, there's the question we've addressed in the past about oil. As you get into the summer, I know many people run the same oil year round. Sometimes there's a different. Talk a little bit about that.
First of all, I do need to put in the disclaimer that you always need to consult your owner's manual for the type of oil that is needed.
Right.
You will notice that a lot of owner's manuals will put in there two different types of weights of oil. Generally, for the most part, especially up here in Alaska, I really don't recommend going through the hassle of changing winter to summer oil. Most vehicles, especially with the newer advanced oils, it is more than adequate to keep your vehicle. Like Volkswagens use 5W-40. Mm-hmm. Keep that weight in there all year round. Absolutely. There's no problem with it. Now, if we were down in, say, Arizona or New Mexico, where you're seeing temperatures up into the hundreds, 110, 120, mm-hmm. then I might want to maybe suggest something a little bit different. But for the most part, where we're at here in Alaska, you can absolutely keep the same weight of oil in your vehicle all year round and not experience any problems.
Okay. What about diesels versus gasoline engines?
Diesels, I do have some customers that prefer to put a summer weight oil in there. That one, I we kind of leave that up to the customer, because there are arguments for going with a different oil in the summertime. It really kind of depends on what you're doing with the vehicle. You know, if you're going to be doing a lot of towing, a lot of heavy duty type stuff in the summertime, mm-hmm. and I mean more than just hauling a couple of jet skis or a small river boat. I mean, we're talking like serious stuff. Then, you know, you might want to change your oil to a more summer type oil. But once again, always go by what your owner's manual said, mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of vehicles as the newer vehicles come out with and they use increasingly more advanced oils. There's really only one option for the weight of oil to put in there, and you need to make sure that you stick with whatever's recommended by the manufacturer.
Okay. One of my favorite topics has to do with mileage, and I know that in the winter, generally, we can expect, if you're keeping track of how well your car is or truck is performing, you note the mileage, and then as it gets warmer, there seems to be a sweet spot in time with temperatures being as we have them in the middle of summer, where arguably if you removed your snow tires, you have your summer tires on and the temperature's right and you're cruising along, you'll see a significant increase in MPG.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments about that? Is my observation generally true overall, or do some vehicles say, no, I'm just going to be low mileage all year round?
No, you're absolutely right. Weather absolutely affects the MPG of your vehicle. In the wintertime, generally people will see a decrease in their MPGs because of things like idle time, running studded sure. snow tires. You know, there's all kinds of things. And in the summertime, what you're going to see, when you do see a decrease in MPG, people really fail to take into account the effect of running their AC.
Ah, there we go.
As they're driving.
That's the joker in the
Yeah.
In the
because you're asking the engine to work harder in order to do the same amount of work, because it's all of a sudden now it has to turn that AC compressor.
Okay.
And so, you know, people fail to take, you know, they'll come in and say, you know, I don't get it. You know, I changed over my summer tires. I've checked my tire pressure. You know, I should be getting really fabulous, miles per gallon. And then we go out there to take a look and they have their AC running continuously. That will play a pretty heavy hand in your MPGs. But as we hit kind of the in-between temperatures where it's not quite warm enough to run the AC, but yet it's not quite cold enough to let the vehicle idle, you are going to see a pretty significant improvement of in MPGs for your vehicle.
Okay. Okay. That's what I was looking for.
Yep,
any
there's
of those
a sweet,
other
sweet spot. Yep.
That would cause that to happen. Okay. Well, Toby, we've just about finished up another edition of You Ought to Know. Are there things that you want to say that you have not yet said?
As we move into spring, and I'm not going to lie, I'm so super excited about this. I mean, I know I shouldn't be whining a whole bunch. It's Alaska. The snow is to be expected, but I can't help it every single year. This time I get so excited to see the extra amount of daylight and the snow start to go away, and looking forward to see the flowers and the green grass. But as we head into this time of year, go out, check your summer tires, get them ready. Make sure they're all in good condition, so that way when it comes time to change them over, they're ready to go. There's not a lot of fumbling, and you're not caught by surprise when you take them in there your technician tells you, oh, these are no good. So, you know, pull the summer tires out, get them ready to go. As always, you know, have your vehicle checked out for summer. Make sure your AC system is running properly. Make sure your coolant system is ready to go. Because summer times up here are so short, we don't want to waste them by having the car in the shop getting repaired when we could be out playing. So, if anybody has any questions, any concerns, you can get a hold of me at Edmunds Import Auto, right across from the fairgrounds in Palmer, right next to the Noisy Goose Cafe. My people are always on call to help answer questions, vehicle inspections, whatever you need.
Okay. Well, thank you, Toby Edmunds. You ought to know.